Once more onto the breach, dear friends.
Let's close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And I did starring again, didn't I? Okay.
You did.
Well, the Personal Wealth...
Rewinding. Okay. That's what that was.
The Personal Wealth Coach is not only a celebrity-studded...
I don't know about that part.
Radio program.
Stretching the truth a little bit there.
How about an economist-studied...
There we go.
...radio program. It is also our firm, which is the Personal Wealth Coach, which is in Salado, Texas, and is an SEC-registered investment advisory firm.
Yeah, I don't believe that the word economist and stud has been in the same sentence in the last century.
I just put it there.
I appreciate the.
I think economists are the biggest studs there.
Oh
are.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I can offer statistical evidence to prove it.
Well,
let's put it like this. I am the senior economist in this room. You'll agree with that.
Senior by age, yes.
Right.
Oh yeah.
And I have 5 children.
Yes.
Which makes me somewhat ahead of the average.
Right.
Man in the United States,
right.
which I guess is the general category stud.
Yeah, if you want to put yourself in that category,
statistical analysis.
Here. Right.
So I'm and all the children and all of my children are above average.
Well, yeah, I would suppose. I'm not going to argue with that.
Telephone numbers to call in here if you'd like to correct our misapprehension about things or discuss things or have a question or comment or thought. Anything to do with the economy, investing, or things of that ilk, we are painfully ignorant concerning a lot of things that people like to talk about on the radio, including team sports. So if you can call 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400, you can talk to us. And I've got some news that I consider to be quite important.
Yes, probably. It is really news.
It is truly news. It is actually.
It wasn't even on the
it's too new news. It's too breaking news. And I don't think.
It wasn't even on Fox News a minute ago.
There are a lot of people that don't understand the importance of this bit of news. And this is not being facetious at all. Barkarbunga is the name of the largest volcano
in
Iceland.
I'm glad you told me how to pronounce that.
I spent some time researching this. This has been...
You know, this is all about us, folks. This is us.
Right.
He would learn. We would study how to pronounce the name of the largest volcano in Iceland, which is written in near hieroglyphic language.
It's Icelandic.
Yes.
Yeah. I have friends in Iceland. The reason why I'm bringing this up, Barkarbunga, is, as I said, the largest volcano in Iceland, and over the last week or so, it has been showing signs of magma movement under the ground. The chambers are filling, and that's a worrisome event because there's the largest glacier in Iceland is sitting above Barkarbunga, and if there's a minor eruption, it's going to melt that glacier and cause a lot of problems in Iceland as far as if the water runs to the south rather than to the north, depending on where the eruption happens, it can destroy about a third of the power plant production in Iceland. That's kind of a scary scenario. Okay, how does that affect us? Iceland's a pretty small place. The last time there was a semi-major eruption in Iceland, there were some kind of weird things that happened with the breezes and things that shut down air traffic over most of Europe, and that affected Europe and pushed it further into recession. Barkarbunga is so much larger than that volcano, it's really hard to put into perspective, but in the 1780s, a volcano about half the size of Barkarbunga went off. And the Continental Congress of the United States was unable to meet because the harbors were frozen over and stayed frozen over for a very long period of time. There were icebergs in the Gulf of Mexico. I'm saying this not because I think that's going to happen again, but because we don't know how big this eruption is. This could be a really bad thing, or it could be an almost non-event. It has the potential of being a very bad thing. It's the eruption started about 45 minutes ago. And we don't know the size of the eruption yet, but it is a the glacier on top of the volcano is about a third of a mile thick. That doesn't have good things for Iceland in that they use that glacier for all kinds of things. And if it goes away very quickly, it's... This volcano has the potential of changing the world climate for the next several years and the potential of doing some really other bad things as well as changing our whole outlook on climate change. The whole global warming aspect might have a complete revamp. All of our efforts in the United States to bring our focus onto how much humans are changing the climate. We're about to see that all of our efforts go the other direction with one eruption. Hopefully, we don't see that happen. Hopefully, this eruption is a minor one.
I want to emphasize, so far, it's a minor eruption. It's just a minor eruption in the largest volcano in Iceland, and nobody at this point knows how big the eruption will be when it finally...
Right.
Or even if it will blow through the glacier.
Right. It may be a non-event, but this particular volcano has a habit of blowing up bigger...
A habit.
Yes, it's like Old Faithful. It has a habit of blowing up bigger when it skips a century, and this one skipped a century. Just keeping in mind, it is something that's on our radar. We talked about Ukraine and Russia, and that could have some impact on our economy. This has the ability to have at least as much an impact if this changes. We're watching it. I want you to know that. And the fact that there wasn't on Fox News, that means that they haven't really researched this. It may be something you'll be hearing about in a couple of days rather than today. So there we have it. That's my piece of breaking news. You heard it from me first. Hopefully you don't put my face along or my voice along with the nastiness that could happen there.
Well, this is the Personal Wealth Coach. You're welcome to give us a call, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400. We are planning on running this program again next week.
We are?
Yes. So
this is the 23rd of August. So if it's not the 23rd of August where you are, if it's maybe the 30th or something.
Yeah. This is a good way of looking back to see if this was really breaking news. If we
right.
play it again and they go, that was really breaking news.
Could be.
Or, no, non-event.
Broken news.
Right.
Okay. Let's talk about something else. I want to talk about alternative investments just a moment. They've become very popular.
Okay.
We have not been in favor of them and continue to be not in favor of them. And Jonathan Clements in the Wall Street Journal, August 16th, wrote an article about the dangers of alternative investments. Alternative investments are designed, theoretically, to perform well in a down market. In other words, they seem to hold their value in a severe market decline like we had in that between 2007 and mid-2009. And what's happened is the ones that actually did hold their value apparently, and I want to emphasize the apparently here, relatively well in the last two major market declines, and that was the 2000 through 2002, and then the one that began actually late in 2007 and ended in about March or May of 2009. The investments that theoretically held their value during those periods have become very, very popular investments. They've also become places where a lot of people have lost a tremendous amount of money. And to give you an example, the stock market did indeed drop about 56%, meaning the S&P 500, for that period, the 2007 through 9 decline. It's generally called the 2008 decline because most of it occurred in that year. And one of the things that held up relatively well over that entire period was gold. Now, I want to emphasize that gold actually dropped when the market dropped, but it recovered faster, which was really one of those weird things. Well, since then, as we mentioned earlier, if you're a retail buyer of gold, since gold isn't carried on an open exchange, you can't see this the way you would if it were on the New York Stock Exchange or something, but it's dropped about 50% for you. If you had purchased at or near the top of the gold market when most gold was being sold, that's not coincidence. The highest volume of retail purchases of gold were at the top of the market. That's why the market was high. If you had held gold during that period and you looked and you bought the gold during that period and then you sold it in the recent past today or sometime around now, you would have lost about 50%, possibly more than 50%, depending on how you dealt with it, which is the same drop that occurred in the stock market. Now, here's the difference. The alternative investment gold has a downward trend that has been going on for at least 600 years. It becomes worth consistently less in each century. Unfortunately, that is the truth about virtually every alternative investment. A couple of aspects about alternative investments. They don't have readily available liquid markets. You can't see the price in a truly liquid market where you could expect to get that price day after day after day. They are sometimes locked up and you can't sell them. And this is the thing that I think a lot of people don't get. The reason they appear to be stable in many cases is because there is no market for them. So they continue to be carried at the price you purchased them, which makes them sound like they're a very stable investment when they're not. And the backside to that is, as an alternative, there's other alternative investments out there, obviously, but they're typically illiquid, meaning there's no ready market for them. And another aspect to it is, probably one of the prime alternative investments that got a lot of headlines, because we're used by the Yale and Harvard Endowment and a lot of other places, and they've lost a tremendous amount of money on these, by the way, is timberland. And at the time, I remember when it was being marketed as investment trusts and as limited partnerships, and so that you could buy into enough of this timberland. It was very much like the real estate limited partnerships of the 1980s, or the real estate investment trusts that some of which kind of went, the non-traded real estate investment trusts that kind of went boop, many of them, and disappeared. The point is, these things decline in value. Now, you might think, how can that possibly be? A real estate investment trust holds a fixed quantity of real estate. The real estate is getting older. It is decaying as you get income off of it. So that 30 years into the future, you can say with a great deal of confidence that in real buying power, that real estate, which is basically improvements on dirt, is going to be worth less than it is today. I know that's counterintuitive. The same thing, by the way, is true of timberland. I know you, again, this is sort of really counterintuitive. But the actual, if you adjust for inflation, the price of timberland on which forests are growing in the United States that can be cut for timber or are basically being cultivated for timber, after adjusting for inflation, is worth less today than it was 20, 30, 40, 50, or 60 years ago. That sounds a little crazy, but it's real. It's kind of like farmland and ranch land. A while back, I had a family come in, and they had had their grandfather die, and he'd left the ranch to them, and they were really thrilled because they knew how much he'd paid for it, or actually his father paid for it, and how much it was worth today, and they were just really, really happy. If you sit down and looked at, by the way, the inflation over that same period, you would discover they're getting half the value back out of that ranch that their great-grandfather paid for the land itself. And that's just one of those things. Alternative investments, and it points that out in here, the very concept of alternative investments is scary, and frankly, the smart thing to do, unless you are very sophisticated and think you're smarter than everybody else, is stay away from them. And I've gone on, and now you probably have something to say.
Well, I was still looking at the volcanic news, but
okay.
Yeah, I do have some other news. I have some housing sales news to come into. So there's no segue involved at all here. We just jump right from one subject to the next. I know last week we had a caller about segues.
And I saw a bunch of segues running around in Austin. So they were going in circles. Yes. So there's really no need to get a segue here.
Okay. Existing home sales increased 2.4% in July. But on an annualized basis from a year ago, July, sales are down 4.3%.
Yep, and I even understand why.
Yeah, so do I. I'm coming to that. Okay, 4.3% down as far as sales go. Next piece of news. The median house for an the median price for an existing home rose to $222,900, which is up 4.9% from a year ago. So housing sales went down 4.3% as housing prices went up 4.9%.
Yep.
So the price point, we found it. If you raise prices beyond this, you start losing sales.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what we're seeing here.
There's another aspect to that.
What's that?
New home starts have fallen. New home construction is still low.
Mm-hmm.
What it boils down to is in order to build a new home, to add something to the market here, because it's a supply and demand issue.
And you can say that about anything.
But this is an issue where the price goes up because there's a limited supply. And I've been talking to some real estate agents in the area, and what they're saying with astonishing regularity, and we also are getting this from people who are actually selling houses, is that they have more buyers than they have sellers. They have more people wanting to buy houses than they have houses for sale.
Okay, so I've got a different number here, and I don't know. You're talking about housing starts, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've got a different number. It doesn't look like it fell. It looked like it jumped really high in July. It's up 21.7% from a year ago and up 15.7% for July.
Okay, what does it? All housing starts or single family residents?
It has a strong gains in both single family and multifamily units.
Okay, then I could be running behind the power curve.
You may be talking about June.
I was probably. But the rental houses are being built. But more than that,
I've got an excuse for you.
What's that?
This news came out on August 19th. Some other news came out on August 19th. Your granddaughter was born on August 19th. So you may have missed some news in there at some point.
That probably is the cause of my failure.
I have a niece that
was
born
in June, up in July. The point I want to make is that the demand for purchasing, and there's another thing you said in there, by the way.
They also revised June upward.
So there's another thing you said in there that's important. The $220,000 median price, is that it? Okay.
$222,900.
Okay.
Let's be accurate here.
$223,000.
That's the average price. Does that actually exist on any house? Well, maybe one or
probably
two.
Probably.
Maybe somewhere out there.
The median income in the United States.
Uh-huh.
Which means half the people are making more, half the people are making less.
Right.
51,000.
Yeah.
And if you have a two-worker family, we're talking about just over $100,000 gross income. That couple could not afford the average house.
What that means to me is that the price of houses has to come down.
We had that happen. Yeah. A lot more people lost jobs.
But what we're talking about here, the reason why a median house of $222,900 and a median income of somewhere around $54,000 is capable of existing is because interest rates are so low. You can buy that house with a very low interest rate and make a payment that's affordable. If interest rates start coming up at all, housing prices have to come down. People don't go out on the market and say, I want a $500,000 house. They go out on the market and they say, this is the payment per month that I can afford.
I can agree, but I'm not sure that housing prices will come down.
I can also agree with that.
Because unless we get a lot of new houses, we still have a higher demand than we have supply.
Right.
This is part of what we were talking about in the first hour, the paper presented at the Federal Reserve meeting at Jackson Hole called it the polarization of the American workforce. The bifurcation is another term that's been used. We have increasingly, and this, by the way, is not the first time in our history this has occurred, as I mentioned earlier, we have increasingly a set of people who are doing much better and are living in the $220,000 and above houses, who can afford the medium house or the average house with no trouble, and a large group of people who are on the other end of that economic spectrum, and that is, and I would almost be willing to bet if we looked at it, it'd be 20% of the people who are doing very, very well financially, and 80% of the people who are not doing particularly well, and another 20% who are really in the pits.
Right. So when we're talking about 10 or 15 years in the future, that's what I mean about housing prices coming down. In order for us to continue with the theme of history and make our cost of living come down with each new technology, 3D printing is going to exist on the house site.
Do you think they can make a house with a 3D printer?
Are you familiar with papercrete?
Yes.
Papercrete is a shredded paper mixed with concrete,
mm-hmm,
with some plaster over it. This is something that a 3D printer on a larger scale would be able to do without any problem.
Yeah, I actually watched a time lapse, you may have seen it too, on YouTube, of a house being built by a robot, in effect. In other words, the basic structure of the house,
yeah,
was just, it would just go around the walls, adding layer after layer,
right,
to the walls.
Now, yeah, that's right now, it's really expensive to do that. It won't be forever.
Well, actually, the people who made it said that it, even that one was relatively inexpensive. The problem was, and this is the weird thing, they had to go way outside of city limits to make it.
Because the codes don't exist to,
right,
allow it yet. Right.
Because the building codes would not allow that house to exist.
So
even
we,
though it could be made in an automated fashion, and you could put a family of four, as they said, in this house for some ridiculously low amount of money.
Now, let me take this another step further. We mentioned last hour about needing licenses and so on to do electrician jobs and plumbing jobs. So make a note here.
I'm making a note.
You know, plumbing repair, they come out and they stick that router machine into the tube and they push it on through and they spin it around and they get all of the clogs taken care of. If there is a break in a pipe at this point, you have to, if it's in the foundation, you have to jackhammer the foundation and repair the pipe. There's technology that exists today that's very expensive that we use in oil pipes, where you stick a machine in the oil pipe and it goes to the break, and sometimes people are involved, sometimes there's no people involved, and it fixes the oil break. That's going to be cheaper. It's going to be the same thing. You know, 10 years ago, we heard about the United States having these really big, expensive drones that flew around and blew things up, and now we can buy them for $100 at you know, online, and you can get a really, really nice one that has camera and you can fly around and observe things for $400. Think about plumbing and thousands of dollars that you spend jackhammering to get down to a pipe, and think about that situation. Think about repairs on houses. Thinking about if you have a robot that's laying the wire for electrician duty, instead of pulling it through a pipe, which I've got friends that are electricians and they hate it. You're doing an industrial building or a commercial building and you've got pipes that you've got to pull wire through.
Those are called conduits.
Right. Those conduits rip up people's hands. You wear these gloves. It's just that you give that job to the apprentices and they don't like doing it. It's hard to keep apprentices on the job site because they would rather go and do something with a computer or find other employment because it's hard work. That, all of that is going to be replaced, and the price of the house, which is being kept down at that still pretty high level of $222,900 with illegal workforce, that's the reason why it's that cheap, because in order to build a house even for the median price, you've got to employ people that are willing to work in that job environment. We're going to replace that. Places like McDonald's are not going to have lots of people running around in the back. It's going to have an automated system. You come in, you push the buttons, you pay with a card, it spits out whatever you wanted.
Well, speaking of automated systems, this is the Personal Wealth Coach, and this is KTEM, News Radio 14. And in order to pay for all of this, we have to have commercials. So we're going to play some commercials. The telephone number is to call in here on the other side if you'd actually like to ask us any questions or make any comments. Presuming today is August 23rd, will be 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
We'll be back. Back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And the telephone numbers to call in here if it's August 23rd are 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And the volcano continues to melt ice.
Yes. That
hot off the presses.
The volcanologists that are working for the Icelandic government says that if it doesn't break all the way through that one-third of a mile thick glacier, it's no big deal, but if it does break through, it's going to be a large eruption because it will have a lot of steam built up. So we're either looking at a major runoff scenario, and that's not electoral, or we're looking at a very large explosion. The 9 minutes ago, the Icelandic weather alert changed the flying conditions to red, which means that air traffic is being diverted around Iceland at this point.
And we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Morning, guys.
Good morning.
Let's get to some financial aspects here on your show. You, if a company came out, well, let's just get to Star Trek, basically. I know everybody's a fan of Star Trek. But if a company came out with something like the anti-gravity device that they have on that show, or a transporter, I think that company would do pretty good.
I think so.
Now,
on
this show, they can go to something that will make their food, make parts, make weapons.
Yeah.
It's called a replicator.
Yep.
Now, to me, somebody has basically invented that rudimentary replicator in this 3D printing that you're talking about.
Right.
I've seen
correct.
Some of these YouTube deals where they make actual toys with moving parts.
Yeah.
And that's amazing.
And
yep. How do you think investment in the future in the companies looking at that technology would do? Second is back to your to the REIT that you were talking about earlier, the Real Estate Investment Trust.
Right.
I know you spoke highly of several months back on AT&T, and I bought some stock, and it's done fairly good, especially in the dividend portions. They're now talking about spinning off their hardware, if you want to call it that,
right,
into a REIT and separating that from their just from the business part of it.
Right.
Could you comment both on the investment possibilities and a company making these replicator 3D printing machines, and also how AT&T would fare if they did spin off their hardware part into a REIT? And I'll hang up and listen. Thanks, guys.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Let me hit that 3D printing thing real quick. Right now, well, let me give a historical example, historical being in your lifetime and in mine. About 20 years ago, I was talking with a doctor, and he was pointing at the pager on his hip. And he said, this pager is the future. Everybody's going to have one of these. And he said, this pager allows wireless communication with me anywhere I am. I can connect with anyone. There are satellite companies that are out there that allow this pager to work wherever I go. So what he did, he said, there's only three satellite companies that are out there right now.
Yes. Okay.
And he
right.
bought those three companies.
And lost a lot of money.
All three of those companies no longer exist as they were. It's more dramatic in the 3D printing case in that most of the patents for 3D printing are available to the public domain. This is a different type of technology coming out. People that make good 3D printers can do really well, so don't get me wrong there, but there is no barrier to entry into that market. And what does it take to make a 3D printer? It takes a 3D printer to make a 3D printer, if you think about it just a moment. So who can enter the market in making 3D printers? Mm-hmm. If you're building a 3D printer, it's kind of like the story of Best Buy. If you are selling a computer in your store, and you're selling a bunch of other electronic equipment in your store.
In Best Buy, isn't that the place you go to find out, to see the stuff you're going to buy on Amazon?
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
You're selling the keys to your own destruction. People go into Best Buy to look at an item, and then they go home, and they open the computer that they bought at Best Buy to buy the part that they just looked at Best Buy, only they're buying it somewhere else online. When we're talking about 3D printers, we're talking about the same thing. There's a lot of things. There's a lot of innovations that are happening out there. But you mentioned, the caller mentioned that he bought AT&T stock. We don't recommend buying individual companies. I don't care how good the company is. We don't recommend it because there's a lot of risk associated with that. And I realize a lot of people make a lot of money doing that. The caller made money. He's got good dividends off of this. AT&T could fail tomorrow. Why? I don't know. Any company could fail tomorrow. Why? I don't know. The American economy is a lot less likely to fail than AT&T. And when I look at a statement like, or I listen to a statement like that caller just gave, we don't recommend you go out and buy an individual stock. And yes, you can take advantage of the innovations that are happening, but you can do it without taking the huge risks too.
There's a lesson that you can draw from this that I think is advantageous in investing. And that is that 3D printing is a disruptive technology.
And that's just like the Internet.
And just like the Internet, just like the...
Tractors.
The Astrolabe.
Mm-hmm.
If you've never heard of that, it enables people to navigate away from sight of land.
Right.
The chronograph, which was the predecessor to the modern watch.
Right.
The issue of being able to...
The Gutenberg press.
Yes, the Gutenberg press. Now, I don't recommend you buy Gutenberg.
I think that might not be a good idea to buy Gutenberg.
The cutting-edge technology that Elon Musk is investing in, and he goes public with these companies, would I recommend buying them? No, and the reason is, similar to alternative investments... When a new company cranks up like that, that has a cutting-edge technology, we tried that in the 1990s, by the way, a lot of people flock to that company, making it massively overpriced from the IPO forward.
Right. If you look at the dot-com boom of the late 90s.
Now, if you really wanted to do some research, and in my opinion, in the long term, have the best results, and I'm going to talk about your REIT in just a second. What you do is you figure the major socioeconomic impact in the economy. And the major socioeconomic impact in the economy is that it's going to make things more depersonalized. The higher profit margins are made in serving the people who have higher profits, more willing to spend money to get personal service. Finding companies that produce quality work on a personalized basis.
Or...
Yes. Or sectors of the economy that are doing that.
And finally, intellectual property. So when we're talking about 3D printing right now, a lot of that is publicly available. But if you have a way of using 3D printers to create something that you own the patent for, that the company owns a patent for, or they're innovating new ways of doing things and they own the intellectual property, we're talking about a different area all of a sudden.
There's a key thing about REITs, and I said this earlier. It's also true of master limited partnerships. And it's also true of high dividend companies like AT&T. And that is, every study that's ever been made of high dividend investments says that over a decade or longer, they dramatically underperform the broad market. Why? Because in a time of rapid change, and that's what we've got here, if they're paying out money to you rather than reinvesting it, they are dying. AT&T is spinning off its landline division, which, by the way, I once was an employee of, because they recognize it is a dying proposition. And the best way to get the best money from it is not to sell it to another company, because the other company with its billions of dollars and sophisticated analysis is going to look at the AT&T landlines division and going to look at that thing and said, that's dying. We're not going to pay much for it. It's a lot better to sell it to the public in the form of a real estate investment trust. And by the way, because it's dying, it's going to pay off high dividends.
Yeah, this is,
and they're going to get a better price for it than they would otherwise. But believe me, AT&T wouldn't be selling it if it was a good idea to buy it.
If it was going to be profitable, they wouldn't sell it.
Then you'd get great dividends. It's just that over a long period of time, it's kind of like buying a bond. You know, they're selling bonds out there with 6% coupons on them that have a negative yield to maturity, and people are buying them thinking they're getting 6%.
Right, and then you hit the thing that I was going to hit and combine it with something else.
Okay.
We've been talking for now 2 years that the bond market is overpriced, that interest
yes.
rates are going to come up. And a couple of weeks ago, somebody said, well, what areas are overpriced right now? Bonds and utilities. Utilities look really good right now. Bonds look really good right now, as long as you don't look very deep. If you see a thing with a coupon on it that says 6%, people go, ooh, 6%, and they buy it, and they've got a negative yield to maturity that they are going to owe taxes on that interest anyway. So it makes it even more negative. When you're talking about a utility, their dividends are going up through the roof. They're not reinvesting because the dividends are coming from defunct technology. So recognize that two of the major areas that are overpriced right now are bonds and utilities.
And defunct technology.
And defunct technology. People say that you guys are always so optimistic.
Isn't that a German word, defunct?
Right. It's really easy to be optimistic about areas of the economy at any point. When we're talking about the crash time in 2007, 2008, we were saying, okay, long-term treasuries are really looking good right now. And they were. When you look today, we say a lot of the stock market is in really, really undervalued still. But we're looking over at bonds and saying that's way overvalued. We need to be really careful how you approach that. And when we're looking at utilities,
yeah.
it's the same thing. And AT&T is a utility.
Anything that pays a stream of income above that of the same maturity treasury security carries a risk, and the higher the risk,
the higher
the income, the higher the risk. And you can say, well, what could possibly be dangerous about owning, for instance, a master limited partnership that has lots of pipelines? Well, the pipelines are decaying, and the price of oil is coming down. And historically, we will see a further decline in the price of oil and a further decline in the revenues people are paying to pump oil through pipelines. Not to mention the fact that the mere existence of the fact that you've got pipelines in there, one of them breaks and you get a spill, and it sure does mess with your income.
A lot of the new houses being built, we're talking about housing starts and all that stuff, a lot of the new housing being built don't have telephone lines in them. They don't have a jack in the wall that you plug into for your landline, because people that are buying these new houses don't use landlines. So consider that when you're looking at a real estate investment trust being put off that holds a bunch of landline material from AT&T. They're getting rid of it because it's slowly going away, and not so slowly in some ways. Anyway, we've got commercials still to play, I think.
No.
We played them all. Oh, well, that's nice.
Well, I don't know. There's something here. There's this thing right here.
Yeah, I thought that was a commercial, but I wasn't sure. Is it?
I don't know. You think it looks like a commercial to you?
I don't know. I
doesn't
can't really see it from over here.
Well, we'll play it.
Nothing happened.
So
that's why we were confused.
Satisfied that issue completely.
The cutting edge 1990s technology of that computer is
1990. It's about a 1990. Yeah.
I think it's more than 95. It's somewhere in the late 90s, but it is far ahead of the rest of the technology in the studio.
Yeah, it's really cool. Well, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach again. Telephone number is in here 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
Speaking of the bond market, a number like 5 or 6 different members of the Federal Reserve Board who are voting members were interviewed by the Wall Street Journal at the Jackson Hole shindig. That's an interesting term, shindig. And they seem to be pretty much consistent in that sometime at the end of the first quarter of next year is when they anticipate beginning to raise interest rates, but, and this is another strong warning, if we get the kind of growth in the second half of the year that some of them think might be possible, and hang on to your seats here, folks, 4% GDP growth second half of the year is a possibility. A dramatic decrease, because one of the things they're looking at is the fact that they may not be measuring unemployment correctly. If, in fact, we discover that employment is higher among people who actually want to work than we thought, and we get high-speed growth in the economy in the second half of the year, the Federal Reserve could raise interest rates much earlier. That's the consensus from the voting members of the Federal Reserve. Now, why is that crucial to you? Anything that you have in your portfolio because it pays high income, whether it's dividends or interest, will be negatively affected when the Federal Reserve starts raising interest rates. The consensus among the people, the commentators, the strategic thinkers about the market that I read, and I read them because they have been right so consistently, the consensus is that despite all the noise about this, the participants in the bond market are unprepared. Excuse me.
Wow.
Unprepared for that reality. They're unprepared for the high probability, near certainty, of a sudden fall back to rationality in the bond market. Now, how bad can that be? The last time we had this happen, which was in the late 60s, early 70s, I know all of you remember that really, really clearly.
I don't remember that at all.
Right.
I remember reading about that.
The purchasing value of a long-term treasury bond, which is the one of the benchmarks here, fell by 50% in a period of about 3 years.
Yeah. And it ended with the late 70s in the time of Jimmy Carter with double-digit interest rates on all kinds of stuff.
It peaked out in about 1982. And it's not coincidental that the price of gold and the peaking of interest rates were simultaneous. Once we go from a period of falling interest rates, which we have seen for over 30 years, to a long-term slow rise in interest rates, which we're very likely to see for the next 10 to 15 years, we're going to see a major shift in the investment markets. And it's one that, very frankly, almost every investor out there just simply hasn't lived long enough and participated in the investment markets long enough consciously to recognize is going to happen. But it happens with regularity through history, and it is that thing that George Santayana warned us about: those who do not remember the past are condemned to repeat it. So it's important to take a look at your portfolio, and if you've got a portfolio that's oriented on income, you either have to be willing to take some pretty severe hits there. And by the way, it's my opinion, it's a very, very good idea to look at the price on the securities in your portfolio. If you have, for example, a bond that's trading at 104 or 106, which means that you have a 4 to 6% gain built into the bond that will go away by the time it matures. I don't give these specific advice in that area very often, but the bottom line to it is that gain is, you're guaranteed to lose that gain down the road. It's an absolute guarantee. And you say, well, I'm getting all this wonderful income off of here. You're still going to lose the gain. And if you actually calculate, if you don't know how to calculate a yield to maturity on a bond, then you probably shouldn't be owning bonds. But calculate your yield to maturity, you probably find out that it's pretty low. And you, in some cases, it's a negative number. And it's one of those things that we always get out of things too early and probably get into them too early and so on. I don't know. I think we've done pretty well at this over the years. Looking at, as we do client reviews, I'm getting more convinced of that. But the point is that interest rates are going to rise. The economy is going to do great, which means that over the next several years, the next decade or so, every indication we have says that equities, particularly the ones we call value equities, are going to tend to do quite well in this economic universe that we're in and moving into. And income-based investments are going to do poorly. Alternative investments are going to tend to do poorly for the next decade or so. And that's just kind of a strategic thing you want to pay attention to. And it's going to be an interesting next decade with the economy, technology, interest rates, and everything else in it changing at a pretty amazing rate of speed.
Well said.
Okay.
Yeah. If we look at all of human history and prehistory.
Wow. Prehistory?
Yeah.
I've tried looking at prehistory.
Well, we've got some prehistory that we have history of. How's that for weird? The American Indian is a great example of prehistory that we have history of.
You mean the Native American population?
Yes. The Native American population, the Inuit population, the Eskimos. We have a history of prehistory.
A person who is an American citizen from India is an American Indian. Do you realize that?
I think it's an Indian American.
Indian American. Okay,
right.
So there's a difference between an Indian American and an American Indian.
Right.
I got to get that straight. Okay.
You have to put the order correctly.
He's primarily an American.
Yeah. If we go back to when we're looking at fossil records and we're looking at anthropological changes, we've got a pretty good idea of what's happened over the last 300,000 years with humans. And it took them 290,000 years to really start getting houses together properly. And then it took them 8,000 years to really start getting the writing together so that lots of people were doing it, then the wheels were being used regularly. It took hundreds of years after that before stirrups, and then it took another 1800 years before we started
before
using
stirrups.
Internal combustion, and then our rate of change is increasing exponentially. If you look over the changes that have happened in the last century and the changes that took place a century before that, we've had a lot more changes packed into it, and it's going to keep increasing in speed. It's going to be hard to keep up, but that's going to disrupt a lot of the industries around. We've got to be nimble. Just keep that in mind. Being nimble with your investments, being nimble with the way you're educating yourself. Educate yourself in the most open way possible.
I want to throw one other little thing in there that I just read today. Maybe we'll talk about it in a couple of weeks again. 529 plans, if they're held by the grandparents, can limit or eliminate financial aid for children who otherwise would qualify because their parents are low income. If they're held by the parents, it does not have as great an effect.
So that's important to know.
All right, gift the money to the parent, put it in the 529 that way.
If you would like to contact us off the air, we're almost out of time here. So if you'd like to contact us off the air, we have voicemail waiting during the weekend, and actual people answer the phone during business hours. If you would like to contact us locally, the number is
947-1111.
You can also reach that number toll-free, 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. You can see all about our philosophy, and you can listen to podcasts of this radio program. If you would like to contact us, you can contact us directly through email at Jeff or Jake at tpwc.com.
True. It's not just a word on your Fox News station. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.